glad you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you. We're glad you're here.
Welcome to Mark and Friends. I'm your host, Donna Leland. And today we get to talk with Chip Ingram once again. And today he's going to walk us through love and choosing love. He has come up with a new book by Moody Publishers, I Choose Love, How to Love Your Neighbor as Yourself. Thanks so much, Chip, for joining us here on Mark and Friends.
Thanks, Anna. It's great to be with you.
Now, choosing, you've also written another book about choosing joy, and we had a chance to chat with you about that. And now we're making another choice, choosing love. Now, love is a big word thrown around all over the place. So give us the basics. What is the difference between loving pizza and loving your neighbor?
Well, the problem in the English language is we can use the same word. And so it's just way too broad.
Yeah.
And so in the Greek New Testament, there's at least four, and probably in kind of ancient Greek, there's maybe even five. But you know, there's kinds of love. If people could think of a pyramid, today we think about love as romantic love, it's eros, it's sexuality. The last 200 years, love has been almost completely defined that way. But there's a family love. In Greek, it's storge. It's the love that a parent has for a child, a brother to a sister. And then there's friendship love, deep commitment, mutual with one another. That's phileo love, you know, like the city of Philadelphia. And then there's eros love, which is important. You know, it's this romantic, sexual love. And underneath it, at the very bottom of that, you know, if we make a little pyramid, is God's love. It's agape love. This is a choosing love. This is a putting other people's needs ahead of our own, not when we feel like it, but as an act of obedience empowered by Him. And when that becomes the foundation, that changes the family kind of love. We consider others in the family more important. Then that builds the kind of friendship love. And God's desire is that, you know, we would find that mate one day, and He created sex for a good reason, that on the basis of agape love and family kind of love and becoming deep friends, that we would experience romantic and eros love. And so what I wanted people to get is, so often the emphasis is so on this romantic love or sexual love that it's on again, it's off again. When will that special person come into my life? My hopes and dreams are set on these things. And we just go over one after another of disappointment and hurt and pain. And you don't have to wait for love. You can choose it. And it makes all the difference in the world.
You know, you hear that phrase, falling in love, like it's this magical experience that, you know, fairy glitter falls on you and your eyes glaze over and you know that person and they're going to come and they're going to meet all your needs. I mean, it's just Cinderella, it's Prince Charming, it's just a lie. And that's why I like your book, because it's challenging the truth that love is not something that merely happens to us, over which we have little control. But you explain that it's something we actually choose to experience. And then I love that you also put in there, when we don't feel like it. Dig into that.
Yeah, I think the what's happened over time is we're bombarded by these messages. And so people are feeling like, you know, when that person comes into my life. So instead of being an active agent, it's passive.
Yeah.
I hope someday, somehow, and love becomes a small little thing that you can't control. And the fact of the matter is, the greatest picture of love is Jesus at the cross. And sometimes we forget that conversation He had with the Father where He didn't feel like going to the cross. I mean, fully God, but He's fully human, and all the emotion, all the separation, and all the rest. And God, Father, if there's any other way. But love is giving another person what they need the most when they deserve it the least at great personal cost. And that's exactly what Jesus did. And so when you're stuck in your marriage, when someone in the family has hurt you, when one of your grown kids has turned away from you or from the Lord, and everything in you wants to either pay them back or shut down or get them out of your life or blame them, love that never fails is the kind of love. Not that there aren't boundaries, not that there's not clarity and truth, but it gives the other person what they need the most: acceptance, concern, refusing to quit. When they deserve it the least, when they've treated you in ways that they don't deserve this, this isn't fair, at great personal cost, that kind of love, that agape love, transforms marriages and families and small groups and churches and the workplace. And that's why God said, I want you to love one another the way I've loved you, so that the world would know that the Father sent me, that Christianity, our faith, is either legitimate or illegitimate, according to Jesus, to the world, based on how we love one another. And we live in a world that it's, if I don't feel like doing it, or my feelings are valid, emotions are important. Your feelings are not facts.
Yeah.
They are a chemical event that occurs in your brain. How you feel isn't reality. And so when we choose to do right things, it actually rewires our brain along with the truth and the life of what God has said.
Mm. Yeah, sometimes love feels like death.
Oh,
on so
yes.
many levels. And, you know, it's just so hard to wrangle those feelings. You know, you've got all this rejection coming at you, maybe false accusation, misunderstanding. And something that you'd place so much hope and dream on now is not paying off. And maybe you invested quite a bit into this and there is no payoff. And so, yeah, it hurts. It feels. But how do we wrestle those feelings and, you know, get them back into... And because I always know about feelings. They're based upon what we think. So
yes.
I use my feelings as just basically a barometer as to, Donna, what are you thinking? Okay, so this person is rejecting you. I do mm-hmm. have a child who has mm-hmm. gone no contact,
mm-hmm.
like you spoke of. And anytime I think about it, it's just so painful, you
yes.
know, because you've just given so much. And but then I have to say, Lord, what's the truth here?
Yes.
The truth is you love her. And mm-hmm. the truth is I would have done it anyway, even if I was rejected down the pike.
Yeah.
So talk to us about our feelings.
You know, if I could use a marriage illustration, you know, sometimes wrapping truth in a story is really helpful. And
yeah.
long before, you know, I kind of studied Philippians or probably knew this theologically, my wife and I both came from alcoholic homes and had pretty radical experiences of following Christ. We were absolutely committed to Him, committed to each other, did our relationship the way that was honoring to God. And in about 6 months, we couldn't resolve anger. We didn't know how to communicate. All that baggage that we didn't even know we had was just throwing our relationship to where she shut down, wouldn't talk to me. And, you know, I would talk and walk around the bed and say, you know, quote verses to her about we can't go to bed with things unresolved. And I mean, the harder I tried, the worse it got, the harder she tried. So we find ourselves with a really good Christian counselor. And by this time now, we've really hurt. What happens? You hurt one another, and then you're wounded, and you're wounded. I didn't want to love her, but I was committed to the Lord, so I don't have an exit. I mean, divorce isn't an option, and I don't want to live like this. And so I humbled myself out of necessity. Well, let's go get some help. We can't figure this out. And you know, we learned a lot of really good things, and the guy was just fantastic. And I remember thinking, you know, in a moment, because I was blaming her, and if she would do this, and if she would change, and if that would change, and she would meet my needs, and if she wasn't so, and the list went on and on. And to your point, that's where all my thinking was.
Mm.
And it was producing no good. And I remember in a time with God realizing, okay, I can't change her. If I could, I'd give it my best shot.
Yeah.
Second is right now, I don't want. I'm going to be honest, God. I don't want to connect because I'm wounded and I'm insecure and I'm hurting. And so But I understood, you know, I got to listen from this counselor of her world that I didn't really understand. Lord, right now, I'm only going to give to her what you gave to me. I don't feel like it, and I can't do it for her right now. But you have accepted me. You have loved me. You have forgiven me. You have affirmed the good things in my life. I'm going to take that, and even though I don't want to and I don't feel like it, just as my obedience to you, I'm going to choose, whether I feel like it or not, to treat her like that, to address some of the issues. And not expecting there's going to be fireworks, and I'd love to tell people, oh, just do that for 3 days and everything changes. They didn't. It was a slow, gradual, and I started to change. And like every relationship is a system, and as I started to change, she started to change. And little by little, each of us understood, back to what you said, our thinking was so warped, and we didn't know it. Mm-mm. And yes, we needed some skills, and we got those and learned to communicate. But the breakthrough was choosing, not waiting for feelings, not, you know, make my life work. Why did you do that? If you would only. And it was that giving the other person, who happened to be my wife, what she needed the most. She came from such hurt, such brokenness, such rejection. What she needed the most, when in my experience, she deserved it the least, at great personal cost. And what I would say to everyone listening is, by the way, you can't do this on your own. You don't have the power to do this on your own. It is, God, I need to receive your love so I can give this in this way. And I'm going to persevere out of my obedience and my love for you. And then, of course, it changes your thinking. It changes your emotions. And I'm glad to say, a little over 47 years later, and 4 kids and 12 grandkids, and I'm just married to the most amazing person. But we've really had to work at that. And as just exactly what you said. But that's true with a grown child at times. Yeah. I mean, that's true with a, you know, someone in your church that betrays you. But the division that we're allowing to happen, this part of why I wrote the book, is Christians. When I read what Christians post on Facebook and Instagram, when I hear people talk about other believers that they don't even know, or things like politics, yeah, or, you know, our view of Gaza and Israel, I have opinions on all those things. And we can even disagree on all those things. But those things have to be so secondary to a brother or sister, fellow heirs of the grace of God, of how we treat one another and how we talk to one another. And we have to choose love. And the division is crippling to us personally. And it's an embarrassment to the gospel.
So glad you addressed that. I mean, that really is the elephant in the room, because yeah, Christians are certainly getting into their divisions and being whipped up into a frenzy. Yeah. And I'm just like, Lord, that's not kingdom building. That's not doing anything positive. So I'm so glad you brought that up. Now, in the book, you talk about organizing biblical love. Let's get a little, you know, into the details here, into 4 characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Go over those 4, and why is that so important to build this framework in our brain?
So for those that are a bit more familiar with Scripture, this is an exposition of Philippians chapter 2, and the context of the book is a great church that Paul loves, and he's in prison, and he may be executed, he's not sure, and that little church is getting external pressure, but they also have some conflicts within. And so in the midst of that, he shares some things in the first chapter about the perspective and choosing joy. And then in the second chapter, he says, look at all that God's done for you. If you've experienced love and purpose and joy, then make my joy complete. And then he says, how? Have this mindset or this attitude that was also in Christ Jesus. And then as you study that mindset, what you find is there's 4 specific characteristics of agape love that flow right out of the text. The first one is it gives. Jesus gave. He came and he gave. He laid down his life. He put our needs ahead of his own. He left heaven in the worship of myriads of angels. Second is He served. He came as a servant. I'm here, although I deserve the praise of everyone, I'm going to come and humble myself, and I'm going to come as a servant. And then the third, he came not just as a servant, but it says, even to obedience as a slave on the cross. In other words, I'll fulfill the Father's will, and humanly, not feeling like it. But love means I'm going to do what God says. Jesus, in his last night with the disciples, kind of gives us a real twist on love that would help us. In John 14:21, you know, he says that he that keeps my commandments is the one that loves me. And the one that loves me will be loved by me and my Father. And we will come, and old translation is we'll manifest or we'll make our abode with you. Obedience is how God measures love. And so finally, he just cares, and he gives examples of Epaphroditus and Titus, and the passage develops. But what you begin to see is if you want to exercise agape love, and by the way, according to the Apostle Paul, this kind of love never fails. Mm. Think of that. Whatever situation, whatever heartache, whatever pain, doesn't mean everything's going to turn out the way you want to. This kind of love never fails. It's a love that gives and considers others more important than yourself. It's a love that walks into a room and says, I'm second. How do I serve in this situation at work? How do I serve when I get up and see the needs of my family or my roommates? This is a love that, oh, I don't want to forgive them after what they did. It's a love who obeys. And then finally, it's a love who we become caring people. I mean, we're the people that bring coffee to the office. We're the people that should notice that, you know, so-and-so, I was somewhere and having a conversation and my batteries went and plugging into this and plugging into that. And it was with a person, we just happened to have a casual conversation. I didn't think anything about it. And I don't know, I bet it was 10 days later, I got a package in the mail. No name, no anything. And it was one of those bars that will charge everything. And it was someone noticed I had a need. Someone cared. And no fanfare. No. And I was like, where did this come from? And what I realized was, you know, that's agape love. We just care. You see a neighbor struggling. You see their yard get up kind of high and you wonder, hey, is everything okay? And you just go cut it for them. Or you see someone, you know, it's people who care are the kind of people that walk around the office and there's people that you know and you notice someone's really quiet or someone is in a corner or someone doesn't say anything in a meeting and they just walk up and say, hey, just check it. Everything okay? That kind of love changes the world.
That's what we need. That's the kind of love that we need, but that's only possible, I know in my own experience, when I am full, right?
Yes.
Because what I'm looking for is everybody to meet my needs. When I feel needy and empty, then of course I go to my first well, and that's my husband. And, you know, he's supposed to listen perfectly, give perfectly, be there perfectly. And so I just see him as a resource or, you know, other people in my world or opportunities that I have and things I do. I'm looking for them to. But see, it never does. It never satisfies. God's never going to let that happen because he wants to be our source.
Yes.
Right, Chip? And, you know, it says, love as you have been loved. So
right.
I am honestly learning how to love out of his fullness. And, you know, I've stumbled and did it right sometimes, but now I feel like my walk's a bit more consistent because I'm focusing in on, I am loved. I don't need
yes.
to get love from you. I mean, it's nice if you throw me, you know, a bone every now and then, a kudo,
sure.
but it's not what I live for. So that's kind of a fun place to be, isn't it?
Well, it is. And what you've described is a complete paradigm shift. If you would shut your eyes for a minute and someone would hand you, if you wear glasses, you take off those glasses and you put on some new ones. If you don't wear them, if you put on a set of glasses and you looked at the world completely different, just the way you said is that you would go, oh, these people, my work can't deliver it. My mate, my roommate, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, my success, my fame, my likes, how many people respond to my post. None of those things can fill this huge vacuum. Only you can. And you want to. And you're available. That you can't give away what you don't have. I can't give away what I don't have. And I think your walk with God is transformed. And it's not like I ought to read the Bible or I should pray longer. Those kind of questions completely miss the point of a relationship.
Yeah.
It's, I want to be with you, Lord, and you have told me that your word is alive and living. And the only way my thoughts change and my brains change and my feelings change is when I hang out with you, because we always become like the people we hang out with.
Yeah.
And when we talk honestly, and you've described the kind of source that allows us to give away agape love. And it is so critical. It's so important. I think one of the first great steps, you know, of people listening to us right now would look at the people that are hard to love. And just like in your mind right now, say, I can't do this. I can't love him after what he did. I can't. And you know what God would say? You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. You can't. But I can through you. Would you let me? And that's, again, that changes how we think about these relationships. And instead, we hunker down, we pay back, we're passive aggressive, we cut people out of our lives, we cancel them. And then all that bitterness and all that resentment, we go to coffee shops and talk about the other person only to our own detriment, and our souls just shrivel up. And God loves us way too much for us to live that way.
I agree. And part of my, I think, you know, problem and what a lot of us struggle with is just expecting that person to come through for us. If I just put in, you know, the quarter and pull the lever, then love will come back at me. And, you know, it doesn't work that way. We've been talking with Chip Ingram of the book I Choose Joy from Moody Publishers. Thanks so much, Chip, for spending time with us today on Mark and Friends.
May his body be healthier because of our conversation. And thanks so much to let me be on your show.
And thanks for listening, dear friend, to Mark and Friends. We're a ministry of Great News Media. Hope you have a great and blessed day. Don't forget that Mark and Friends is always sitting on our website. Click on Mark and Friends and listen in the convenient MP3 format. Have a great day.